You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 246. I'm Thomas. Jamie is actually off for her birthday. So happy birthday, Jamie. Hope she's having a good time. I've got another person on the podcast, though. Someone I'm sure you'll be happy to hear. Back from a long hiatus on this show, Eli Bosnick. How you doing?
Thomas, thanks so much for having me. Who the fuck is Jamie? I'm off for a mere 17 months and you replace me?
Yeah. And the best thing is, I've completely fabricated some sort of social justice outrage, cancel culture thing, just to get you on to talk about your baby.
This is where
the big reveal, everybody. Thanks for not telling Eli until now. I totally faked this Harper's Letter thing. I did it. It was me.
Yep. You got Joanne to play along. I get it.
How is your lovely child?
He's good. He likes to eat and sleep. Those are his interests.
Sounds like you have
this
a baby.
Moment. Yep, he is a baby.
Yep. There's really not a whole lot. I remember thinking, oh, I can't wait to try to, you know, I'm going to really try to help out and everything. And you're like, I am a useless turd. There's nothing you can do, especially if you're breastfeeding.
Yeah, you can have terrible anxiety is what I've learned. You can just... You can stare at a monitor in terror like Anne Frank listening at the floorboards is what you can
Oh, how
do.
Often do you check? Because I did that all the time. Every night. Well, it's quiet, so I think the baby died. I'm going to go check
just
to make sure.
See, that's the thing.
100 times a day.
If it's noisy, something's wrong. If it's quiet, something's wrong. That's the secret to the baby monitor.
So then anytime that's not one of those two things, I'm sure you can relax, right?
Yeah, and here's the thing. Baby monitors are too good now. They're too good. Our parents' baby monitor, they had a walkie-talkie that they stuck in your room.
Oh, we didn't.
And
my
it was
parents
always
didn't have
on.
That.
Not at all. Right. Yeah. You were lucky if your parents had a baby monitor. They would just walk into your room in the morning and be like, oh, look at this. He shit all over the place. Hey, build a little tower out of it. Right? But my baby monitor has a Zoom. It has night vision. All of which combines just to make me terrified at all times.
I do the Zapruder film analysis. Do you do that where I'm like,
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Too quiet in there. Is my child breathing? I have to go like back into the left. Like I'm looking at this pixelated baby monitor to see like is the little, because the night vision is terrible quality, you know? So it's like, is the little, was that a movement on the lungs there? Is that, so I do that from time to time. So you're not alone.
Did you fall for the sock?
Fall for the sock. I'm not sure what that means.
Okay, so there's this sock you put on your baby that's like a little heart monitor.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, and your kid, they kick it off 7 to 25 times a night, at which point an app on your phone goes, your kid's fucking dead. Your kid is fucking dead right now.
We're calling the cops.
So you burst through the wall like a Looney Tunes character, only to find that your infant has kicked off a sock.
Yeah.
I lost permission.
I think
but
one
like
of the
20th
texts,
time.
I either sent you this text or I thought of sending you it 100 times, which was like, you know, a week or a month in or whatever. Okay. How many bullshit things do you have that you thought were going to be useful that you now already throw away or discarded? Because boy, did we have a bunch of that.
Oh, so many. Fuck. So everything with long sleeves. If you had told me before the baby came, just like, hey, man, you're not going to have time for sleeves, I would not have believed you. If it's not a onesie that can get over my son's head and entirely strapped onto his body in 3 seconds, I have set it on fire. Yeah. It is currently on fire.
Yeah, we had a lot of intricate like costumes and stuff. And you're like, can't do it. Do you go for the, okay, what's your baby's response to swaddling? That's a key thing because some babies are into it. Some babies, you're killing them.
Oh, he likes the swaddle. He likes the swaddle. We've swaddled since day one. He's good. He's good with the swaddle. He's good with the passy. He is actually a pretty, and I hate to jinx it, he's actually a pretty easy kid. Like, he goes down awake. He's not a big crier. He's not a big whiner. Nice. He's a good eater. But that means that when he's 17, he's going to be like, fuck you, Dad. I'm getting my eyeballs pierced. So, you know, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
You never know. I had that same thing where I was like, well, I don't want to say it out loud, but Phoebe is a really easy baby. And it turned out that she was just a really easy baby. But once they, you'll see once he gets teeth or something that could mess it up.
You don't want to be that guy who's like, yeah, I don't know, really. It's, I don't know what everyone else has been talking about. And then the first tooth pops out and they grab, like, they make a shank out of one of their binky toys and all of a sudden they're jabbing you with it.
But I will say one of the things that wasn't a useless thing, like one of the things that was like, oh, okay, I'm glad we have this. I love those pre-made swaddly things. They're like part an outfit and part a swaddle somehow, you know? Do you have one of those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's like a Hogwarts cape that you can swaddle them into.
Absolutely. Yeah. I am giving my kid a complex, though, right? Like, there's no way I strap my child's arms to his side 4 times a day for the first 6 months of his life, and he can just have a normal sex life. There's no way he's gonna need some amount of oxygen to be restricted to come. And for that, I apologize.
Like what I said, so Phoebe loved being swaddled, Arlo not having it. And when you have the baby who's having none of that, then you start to see, like, oh, maybe this is just like abuse? Like, what is this that I was doing? Phoebe loved it. So you think, oh, great, I'm swaddling the kid. They love it. And then you snuggle them and they're happy. You do it to a baby who doesn't like you. You're like, I'm an evil person. Why am I trying to strap my child down? But all right. I could go on. What's the appropriate amount of time to talk about this? Because I could do 2-3 hours probably.
Welcome back to Dad Chat. But here's the thing. If you don't chat to other dads, you have to do this to normal people who have lives and see movies and sing songs and fuck each other. And it's horrible to do this to normal. Can you imagine sitting Heath down and being like, so Arlo didn't like the swaddle, but Phoebe, he would cut his own eyes out with his fingernails.
Is that why he doesn't return my calls? Okay. That makes sense now. I probably did too much kid stuff, but just wait till they start saying things. It's the best. It's never-ending comedy. Funniest thing in the world. I can't wait. I'm excited.
I have a muffin, and I plan to talk through it during this, just in case.
Oh, my God. That was the best video of all time. Yeah, I can't wait. Your kid's going to do stuff like that. I'm here for it. I just want to say, Eli, that anytime you want to tell me any bullshit about your kid, I'm listening. I love it. It's my favorite
thing. Thank you. Thank you, Thomas.
But speaking of bullshit, speaking of Hogwarts earlier, we've got to talk about this Harper's letter. I saw this thingy, and it's a letter that, and it's so short, honestly, we maybe can just read it. It's like 2 paragraphs, so maybe we read it. But I saw some of the names that signed it, and there's a variety of names. And so I didn't know what to make of it at first. I was like, is this a good thing? Because this is interesting. Like, there are some people I really like who signed this thing. And then there's, you know, some TERFs. And so it was like, what do I make of this? And I genuinely wasn't sure, but I thought maybe you might have opinions on it.
Yeah, I mean, so like, that's the first part, right? Which is that even if you grant that everyone who signed this letter signed it in good faith, and they did not, the association with some of the people on this letter would be a huge problem for me. If I signed a letter that said the McRib is delicious, but I was co-signing it with J.K. Rowling and Barry Weiss, I'd be like, maybe the McRib's not delicious.
Be like, maybe the McRib's racist. I better look into this. There's got to be something.
How does the McRib hate trans people? I should Google that.
Yeah. So, what do you think we should do? Should we read it? It's a letter. It's called A Letter on Justice and Open Debate.
I mean, I pulled a couple of quotes here.
Sure.
And I want to start with how it begins, because I think this is very telling. All right. This is the second and third sentence. Our cultural institutions are facing a moment of trial. Powerful protests for racial and social justice are leading to overdue demands for police reform, along with wider calls for greater equality and inclusion across our society, not least in higher education, journalism, philanthropy, and the arts. But you shouldn't have a but after that sentence. Yeah. Okay, this Black Lives Matter stuff is doing some good things, but hear me out. Here's where it's going too far. That's where this letter starts.
I had the same reaction. It was like, what a weird time to do this. And also, it's the power of how caught up in this movement people are. Like, I saw that article, these Black Lives Matter protests might be the largest civil rights, movement in our history, in the country's history, the most people participating in a movement in history. And so this letter has to be like, that's cool and all. So that's good and all that. But, and the but
we,
is.
We all got together to say the problems we see with it.
Yeah.
Right. And like historic, like from a historical perspective, how well do we look back on the, like, this civil rights movement's going okay, but think pieces of the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Do we look back on those with fondness? So here's another quote, and I think this sort of summarizes the core of their argument. The free exchange of information and ideas, the lifeblood of a liberal society, is daily becoming more constricted. Okay, that I agree with. While we have come to expect this on the radical right, censoriousness is also spreading more widely in our culture, and intolerance of opposing views, a vogue for public shaming and ostracism, and the tendency to dissolve complex policy issues in a blinding moral certainty. Now, thesaurus aside, that is very much saying, I mean, sure, the right's bad, we're in the middle of a pandemic and there's a literal fascist in the office, but have you seen all the calling out that's happening on Twitter?
Yeah.
Huh?
It really is just an open letter to Twitter. It's so, I guess, it just misses the moment so much, in my opinion, that I don't really, it doesn't say a whole lot, you know? And I think what's most frustrating to me is what comes next there.
Because, their little vague list?
Yeah. We've got a list of grievances, but we're not, there's no links, you know, there's no way for us to look into what the fuck these are supposed to be, just a vague list of grievances. And then, as if to acknowledge that probably you're bullshitting about some of these, they're like, look, whatever the argument around each particular incident, the result has been to steadily narrow the boundaries of what can be said without threat of reprisal. Well, I think it matters what the arguments around the particular incidents are, because
yeah, you don't say that when you have great examples.
Yeah, because the history of you and I on this show often has been, did you see that this person merely tried to clear their throat and say, what about? And then they were fired upon by radical leftists.
They were murdered.
And their body was left in the street to die. And then you're like, okay, let me just Google that quickly. And it's never that. Like, you know, obviously there are a few examples of stuff like this that, you know, suck because there's a big world and there's examples of people being stupid. But for the most part, these are like usually small incidents that either aren't told correctly or like are misreported or something's made out of it or left out. And if you're going to say, which this letter and the people, again, there are a lot of people I really like who signed this, so I'm troubled by this. If you're going to say that, no, like these are different, like these are maybe there, you know, maybe there's been some bad examples in the past, but these things are serious. Can you like back that up? You know, how about put the burden of proof on yourself to say, here's what happened here, or here are hyperlinks on each of the examples of, you know, we don't want to bog down the letter, but like here are links to articles explaining each thing and why it was a big deal and blah, blah, blah. I really think you should take that on if you're going to do something like this.
Well, and that's the thing is that this letter to me is, and I wrote this on your Facebook post when you shared this letter is filled with more dog whistles than PetSmart because I Googled all of these claims. So here's what their little claims are, just to sum up, right?
Okay.
And this is quotes. Editors are fired for running controversial pieces.
Okay, so that's probably the Tom Cotton NYT thing, because right? I mean, I'd have to imagine. We don't know for sure what they mean, because they didn't say, but I assume it's that.
And here's the thing. I Googled editor fired and the Tom Cotton came, which, by the way, we should point out, that editor ran an op-ed calling for military response to peaceful protest. That's not controversial. It's genocidal, right? That's the kind of thing you should lose your job for, at least.
Well, plus, he said, look, I didn't read the piece. So, like, you should lose your job for that part, especially. And he didn't, by the way, I think he resigned, but, you know, who knows? I guess oftentimes people resign or kind of made to resign and it might effectively be firing. I know Trump does that to a lot of people.
Right. The second thing on their list, books are withdrawn for alleged inauthenticity.
Yeah, what is that? Is oddly specific.
Okay, so this is so specific and I love it. This is about a book that was called, let me find the exact title.
Mein Kampf.
Is about a book that was called Ember Days, right? By Alexandra Duncan, right? And this is a white author who wrote a fantasy book about a Gullah conjurer. Now, Gullah is like a culture that is a mix of sort of like Haitian and African cultures, and it's very deep and they're very oppressed. And this lady put a person of color in her story who's like a witch woman. And people on Twitter were like, hey, I noticed that this is what your book is about. Do you have any connection to this culture at all? And the lady was like, I withdraw my book from entirety. Which,
oh, really?
Again, like, you can agree or disagree with who should be able to write what, but at the very, very barest level, we can agree that if you are a white author, maybe writing about a culture that you have no racial connection to and making them a witch woman, right, as the beginning of your fantasy novel has some problematic aspects that you should address, right? I'm not saying you need to be drawn and quartered. I'm just saying that when you get asked the first three questions about it on Twitter, that's not a violation of free speech. That's people addressing a real problem in literature, fantasy literature included.
Yeah, that sounds ridiculous. So this book, like the author withdrew it?
Yeah, so the author, it's not clear, but the book was withdrawn, basically.
So like it was due to be published and then they're like, nah, not going to publish it.
Exactly. It says that she has canceled the publication of her next novel. So it doesn't seem like it's been pulled. It seems like she pulled it herself.
Okay.
I threw you a little link on that so people can do their own research.
Yeah, I'll link your notes.
So the next thing on their list is journalists are barred from writing on certain topics. Now, again, this is a letter signed by Jesse Singel. So like that might mean don't write a transphobic cover story for The Atlantic that lies about how transition goes for young trans teens. Because when I Googled it, the only thing I found, I Googled reporter barred. The only thing I found was that editors barred a black reporter from covering protests.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually remember that one that came up during the protest. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't noticed any laws passed by Congress on this topic, certainly. But yep.
And again, this is all through the process of the idea of this is a problem on the left. Next up is professors are investigated for quoting works of literature in class.
Okay.
Thomas, I'll give you three guesses about why those professors are investigated and the first three don't count. So I Googled this. And for those who don't know, this is about white teachers saying the N-word. And look, I Googled this, right? And the two cases I found, both teachers were not punished. They were just investigated. Then they were acquitted. I put links in for both of them. And here's the thing about saying the N-word as a white person, right? In an educational situation, here's what I will say. And I say this as a teacher, right? As a person who teaches in a university environment. My educational environment has never been damaged by my inability to say a slur. Right.
Yeah.
It's never prevented my students from understanding the topic at hand. All it has ever communicated is that I respect my students of color enough not to bring up an incredibly hurtful slur in a way that implies that I don't care about the damage that it does to them in that moment to hear a white person say that word. And I will point out, and I think this is important, I have been wrong about this topic. Right. I have been wrong about this topic recently, right? A couple of years ago when Bill Maher used the N-word on air, I wrote a Facebook post being like, well, you know, jokes are jokes. And I was very lucky that a listener to, I think, both of our shows, Jerry, sort of wrote me on Facebook and explained what I needed to know. And I apologized. And like, I was very lucky that I had the understanding of a person in that moment and that they were kind enough to explain to me sort of why I should reconsider my position on that. But like, it's worth looking into. And more importantly, it's not like this conversation hasn't happened, right? Real intellectuals have written a tremendous amount about why white people shouldn't say this word. And the fact that this keeps coming up over and over again is really, really problematic. More importantly, let's keep in mind the Harper sentence. The Harper sentence is, professors are investigated,
yeah,
right? Which implies they don't want an investigation, right? They want students of color to come to their school, their place of learning, and say, hey, my teacher used the N-word in class, and for the school to go, I'm sorry, we can't look into that. That's really, you're going to have to deal freedom, with that.
That'll ruin freedom of speech in this country if we look into what happened there. Plus, I mean, come on. The idea that the sentence, as you say, is investigated for quoting works of literature in class, as though that's the turning point. It's like, no, you can only paraphrase works of literature. We're investigating you because you quoted a work. What was it? That doesn't matter. We're just investigating the fact that you quoted a work of. I think it would maybe change how people felt if it was professors are investigated for using the N-word in their class. And then you'd be like, well, that might be something you might want to look into if it bothered a student.
I'd like an investigation about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a conversation to be had about, you know, teaching fiction, you know, that contains the N-word and how to do that as a teacher. I don't think that's anything I'm qualified to have. It might be interesting, but the idea that, like, you couldn't even look into it. And as you said, they were both, it's not really a criminal investigation, so I guess acquitted is a weird word, but apparently they weren't punished or whatever, right?
No, they weren't punished. It was just something that their university looked into, as well they should have. We should want that to happen. If you don't want that to happen, what you want is a world where professors say the N-word, and when their students complain, the university ignores them. By definition. That's how the grammar works. The next thing, I couldn't even find a story about, so someone feel free to tell me what this is about. A researcher is fired for circulating a peer-reviewed academic study.
You know what I think that's about? This might be, okay, if I have this right, this could be actually a decent example. There was I think it was a black researcher was fired for talking about the results of a study during the police protests, and they were fired for being like anti-black, and it was kind of weird that a black person was fired for being anti-black. This one might have been a good example for the Harper's letter, but again, maybe they should have gone into detail or told us more about it, because I don't know if that's what they're talking about, but that did happen, and so sure.
Yeah,
give us a little more to go on there though.
Right, exactly. And the heads of organizations are ousted for what are sometimes just clumsy mistakes. Again, no citation. Here's what I will say. I can't remember the last time the head of an organization was ousted for just a clumsy mistake.
Yeah, like, oh, I dropped my pen, damn it. You're out.
I can think of a lot of people who did racist stuff. I can think of a lot of people who did transphobic or sexist or problematic stuff. So this is almost the last sentence in the article, and I think it's really telling, and I think it's really worth talking about. So it's this. This stifling atmosphere will ultimately harm the most vital causes of our time. So get in your head what the most vital causes of 2020 under Trump are, okay? The restriction of debate, whether by a repressive government or an intolerant society, invariably hurts those who lack power and makes everyone less capable of democratic participation. The way to defeat bad ideas is by exposure, argument, and persuasion, not by trying to silence or wish them away. And I want to address this argument because, Thomas, I think it is fair to say that you and I have spent a pretty good amount of time right here on this radio program trying to defeat bad ideas by exposure, argument, and persuasion. And I think it is equally fair to say it did not go great. right? Like, look, we've had people reach out who said, yeah, I listened to this debate or I listened to this conversation and it changed my mind. And that is great. I'm really glad that we changed some minds. But if their position, right, let's assume good faith for all of these people, everyone who signed this letter, right, J.K. Rowling, fucking Jesse Single, Barry Weiss, Jonathan Haidt, all mean it with from the bottom of their hearts. There's no other agenda, right? This isn't right-wing catering. This is just people who mean it from their souls, right? If your position is actually and genuinely that the way to defeat bad ideas is by exposure, argument, and persuasion, don't you have to admit that you're a miserable failure in 2020, right? Like, it's certainly not that we didn't have enough exposure, argument, and persuasion pre-2020. So yeah. Now that there's a fascist in the White House and a pandemic, and we cannot convince a significant amount of the percentage, a significant percentage of the population to wear a mask so that we can all stop dying, if that is your genuine position, and I know it's not for a lot of these people, but if it is, you are a miserable failure as a debater. And I include myself in that, right? When 2016 happened, you and I sort of set out to explain ideas and talk about social justice. We did a little bit before 2016 too, right? We tried to use debate and exposure and argument to clear those bad ideas. And while we certainly might have done it for individuals, we might have changed individual minds, right? Pretty much everyone we argued with stayed in the exact same place or moved further and further to the right because exposing those bad ideas only empowered them to further monetize that false center position, right? Yeah. I don't need to name names to point out that, like, we never debated or had a conversation with or had a discussion about anyone who didn't go on to prove us exactly right about that person, right? And that's really weird, right? It's really weird that you can go back into the archives of this show and before when it had the other name and find us 100% correct about all the edge cases of who might and might not have bad ideas. That's an implication to me that maybe the conversations those people were having with us at the time were not honest and that we were, in fact, duped into giving them a platform and allowing them to express those bad ideas. And what we're seeing now, and the reason why the people who signed this letter are so upset, is because what we're talking about is consequences for those bad ideas. Yeah, I forget who said it, but someone said, always look for what the bad guys tell you is against the rules. This tells me that consequences work, right? When J.K. Rowling says, please don't do that, it tells me that we should probably be doing a little bit more of that.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So this strikes me as putting all that together. I feel like it feels to me that what you're really saying is, we are worried about certain opinions because we all know that the right is not listening. So this has nothing to do. I think when you use that part, you're like, hey, look at how wrong all these right wing people are. Surely we got to be able to persuade them. We got to defeat those bad ideas. But we know that's nonsense because they don't listen and you're not going to persuade them. I think you're using that to say there are some other ideas that I have that I'm kind of afraid to say around more liberal people and certain, you know, possibly minority groups. And I want to make sure that people on the left are still going to listen to me when I say those ideas. Like that strikes me as entirely what this is about, as me just reading into the motivations here. Because that's the only thing that makes sense. Like, we know that nobody on the right is listening. They're not a part of this conversation, you know, right? Like, so who is this for?
Well, and I think it also speaks to a specific issue, right? The reason why J.K. Rowling and Jesse Single are both on this letter is because the issue du jour that it's still okay to sort of bandy about as a bargaining chip is trans rights, right? Like, J.K. Rowling hasn't been called out because she's a poor writer who can't write a postscript, right? J.K. Rowling's been called out for her transphobia, right? This is a person who within the month wrote a rebuttal essay to being called out that included, if we let them in our bathrooms, they'll sexually assault us, right? This is about defending transphobia as a bargaining chip. And, you know, I know that the atheist community, for what that's worth, has amazing people in it, and I certainly don't want to throw the atheist community under the bus, but, like, there are very prominent people in our community, in our social circles, right? People who I consider who have been incredibly kind to me with their platform and just in person, who have very happily hosted bigotry against trans people or allowed for bigotry against trans people in a way that they wouldn't in with anybody else, right? No one who signed this letter would sign it if David Duke signed it, right? No one who signed this letter would sign it if Richard Spencer signed it. And by the way, both of them would absolutely and very happily sign this letter because they say stuff like this to validate their right to spread hateful speech all the time.
Yeah.
The reason why everyone signed this letter, knowing that they'd be sharing a letter and a name with people like Jonathan Haidt and Barry Weiss and J.K. Rowling, is because trans rights and trans people are still an acceptable bargaining chip for privileged people, especially famous ones, right? It is still okay to waffle on the issue of trans rights. It's still safe to do that. And this letter is the last defense for that safety, right? What I see in this letter is people saying, I would still like to be able to throw trans people under the bus to remain comfortable.
Yeah, I think so. I if anyone out there, you know, if you're cis and you haven't any experience with this, TERFs are quite real. I turned out the other day that I was still apparently Facebook friends with a TERF that I didn't know about, and they posted something about the J.K. Rowling thing, and it was man, it's really bad. I won't repeat any of it here, but wow, that's TERFdom is very real. These are people who, and it's not right wingers, which I think is so crucial to this and what you're saying, which is these are still people kind of on the left, but this is an idea they want to still be able to defend. They want to still be able to be anti-trans on the left. And it's ugly. I mean, it's really disgusting stuff. So that was quite startling to me.
Or the people who just want to give a pass to those who are transphobic, right? How many people do we know mutually who, like, hem and haw when you talk about Joe Rogan's transphobia, right? Or we talk about the transphobia that's happened on shows over the last couple of years that are in our community or in organizations that we both know and care about over the last couple of years. Like, this is a very real thing. And I will say, as a cis, straight-looking, white-looking male, I cannot imagine what it must be like to be a trans member of our community, to constantly turn around and find that another person, another so-called thought leader in our community, has thrown you under the bus so that their buddy doesn't get in trouble for something they said.
Absolutely. I also point out there was a really good article in the New Republic. I don't know if you caught this. And actually, it might have predated this by just a day or so, or been the same day. By I don't know this person, but Osita Nwanevu, I guess, is the author, and it's called The Willful Blindness of Reactionary Liberalism, and I'll link it. It's a fantastic article about this very thing. Essentially, it's like a pre-buttle to this letter. It really just knocks it out of the park with this, and it points out that if you look at actual censorship, if you look at the 10 most censored books in this country, most of them have to do with having trans characters. And it's just like having a trans character. It's not even, you know, it's not like some, I don't know, radical Antifa leftist agenda. It's something as simple as there could be a trans person in a book. And then the country loses its mind about that. And so it's the exact opposite of what these people are saying in this letter or what they're hinting at. And I think it's fair to say a lot of people signed this letter and were ignorant about it, didn't think about it, and some people have actually withdrawn their signature from this letter because of the fallout and I suppose because of finding out who all signed it, but not enough people, I think. But yeah, the censorship in our schools is against even having a trans character in a book. That's what's happening.
And here's the thing. this sort of center left, and honestly, I hate to refer to them as center or centrist, because as has become obvious over the last few years, both in our discussions here and online, right, they're just right wingers pretending. They're barely pretending, right? It takes 2 months after a conversation with us before their profile picture changes to them wearing a fucking Make America Great Again hat. So I'm hesitant to call them centrists.
Well, I mean, right? I'll stick up for some people, or not for the people, but I do think that they're, what happens with the passing of time is, you know, there's social progress, and sometimes people think that social progress has gone too far on a particular issue. And I think you're right that often that leads them to just go full right wing. But I very much think there are people who are not Trump supporters and are going to vote left, going to vote for Joe Biden, going to vote, you know, for progressive candidates on other issues. Like, it's, you know, I don't think this means that all these people are closet Trump supporters. I think it just means that, like, they are resistant, they are reactionary to this particular avenue of social progress.
Yeah. I just think that a lot of the time, what we have found, at least in my experience, and I think a lot of that experience has been right here on this show, is that they are actually not interested in conversation and debate and exchange of ideas. They are interested in the monetization of bigotry. And they are that way at best because they are privilege blind, right? At best because they cannot empathize with the idea that using trans people's humanity as a topic of intellectual discourse is hurtful to our trans friends in the community.
Right.
Right. They cannot picture that.
At worst, they're just Joe Rogan, or not Joe Rogan, Dave Rubin pretending that they're progressive on anything to try to, like, dishonestly leech people away from liberal causes. I think that you have a whole range. I think sometimes, you know, sometimes it's all bullshit and they are just pretending. And they are.
And I'd also point out that, like, a lot of these people claim to be liberals, but, like, if you fall for right-wing canards constantly, that's an implication that you need to reassess how good you are at telling whether or not something is a problem on the left or the right, right? Because, like, we both know members of this community who are just constantly tweeting or posting stuff like this or bullshit about, you know, this professor, blah, 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 and you just Google it. And like you mentioned at the very beginning, people who fall for that stuff constantly, who have applied no critical thought to the fact that, wow, I keep getting tricked by the right into promoting their message.
Yeah.
And as skeptics, and we do consider ourselves members of the skeptical community, I'm a proud skeptic. As a skeptic, if I keep getting fooled, I should reassess and educate myself on those issues. And what I read in this letter is a group of people who either purposefully or accidentally want it to be standard public policy that there's not only no consequences for ignorance, but that I should never, ever have to educate myself on those issues.
Yeah, I think that the biggest miss on this, in addition to the fact that it's signed by transphobes, and that's obviously nobody should have signed a letter that was clearly, you know, had that purpose. But in addition to that, the biggest miss on this is that this stupid world they're talking about is entirely from Twitter. Like, there's a quote in this New Republic article that sums it up perfectly. It says, quote, "If Twitter were shut down tomorrow, most of their political world and its concerns would simply vanish." Meaning most of the, like, intellectual dark web people, like, most of these people's concerns would vanish because it's all about, well, I said something and then a bunch of people got mad at me at Twitter. And that's the there's no more free speech because of that. And if Twitter were to go away, there would be none of this would make any sense. Imagine this in a world without Twitter. If people were talking about this, you'd be like, what? 130,000 people have died of COVID. What are you talking about? What is this?
Right. And there's two points to that. The first is, and I know I've said it and I'm kind of a broken record on this show, but, you know, I said it at every debate, every discussion. I started by saying, here's my prediction. Yeah. I'm going to talk about empowered actors doing things with power on the right. And in response, you're going to talk about unempowered people like tweeting or making YouTube videos with no institutional power. right? And then my second prediction was, even though I've said this, it will still happen. And I was always right.
And it happened every time.
I was always right. Yeah.
It was the funniest thing.
I was always right. The second thing, right, is that a lot of the time when you bring that up, when you say, okay, look at this institutional power, this problem is much lesser. You know, the very first time I came on this show, I said, think about what you stand for. And I got this email from a person who absolutely proved to be intellectually dishonest after many, many years of conversation later. But they said, I stand for both. I stand for both. I can care about the problems of the left while fighting the right. And the answer is, one, a lot of the time you physically can't, right? A lot of the people I see fighting against the problems on the left do not address the problems on the right, right? They spend most of their time and energy talking about the left and, in fact, boosting the arguments of the right, right? Sending people to the right by their faux problems with the left. And the second problem is the right wants you to be fighting the left, right? You are falling for right-wing tactics when you do this stuff. And thirdly, and I just want to point it out again, because there is such like a, there's a physical digital record, I guess maybe that's an oxymoron, but like there's a digital record of us really trying this a lot of times, you and I, like getting on here and really, really trying to change minds and be civil and use debate to deal with the ills in our community. And while, again, I know that we did some good for individuals and I know some people really appreciate those things, largely what we did is we gave a platform for largely what I feel like happened is dishonest actors were on a platform and eventually revealed themselves to be dishonest interlocutors.
Yeah, I think you could say that, you know, it's possible we could have picked better people to have on the show. I definitely, that's my fault partially. but
yeah,
also,
I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing you. Yeah. I'm mostly criticizing myself.
No, I think that you could also say that this is just the two things aren't incompatible. Like, I actually agree with you that I don't know what the way to solve this fucking problem is. And it's something that I've been talking about on the show for years now because of the same experience, you know, because of our experience of debating does nothing. These people don't listen to facts. They're not honest. They're not into facts. I mean, we've all had these experiences a million times on social media or whatever. Like a person who thinks COVID is made up, and then like, what do you say to that person? Right. There's not, it's not going to work. But like, I don't blame people for wanting to do something, because I don't really know what the alternative is, other than, for one, if we could somehow just ban Fox News. That would be the only thing that I think would really make a difference. But apparently we can't do that. So I don't know what to do. So I don't fault people for trying. But what I would say is you could take a sort of a compatibilist view here and point out that nothing that these people cited in their letter, which they cited badly and without detail or any way for us to check on it, none of those instances are countering free speech, are negating anyone's ability to have these discussions. They just aren't.
Yeah, none of them.
Guess what? J.K. Rowling still writes her essays about how it's okay she's a transphobe because she was a victim of something. And she still has a huge, gigantic millions of people platform that are reading that. And it seems kind of pointless to me to be like, hey, make sure that you don't say anything mean to J.K. Rowling when she is horribly transphobic. Because like, who is that even convincing? Because like, people either agree with you probably, or they're like, whoa, this shit is really transphobic. I don't know who the people are who are disagreeing, but then would be like open to this letter as a way to make discussion happen. Who even is that?
And let's look at what has affected positive change over the last 5-6 years. It's been the very thing that this letter tells us not to engage in, right? Deplatforming, protest, right?
Yeah.
Personal consequences, right? For racism and sexism and transphobia. Those are the things that are affecting change, right? People hate the Black Lives Matter protests because they are getting things done. People hate called out, right, getting canceled on Twitter because they are real consequences for racism in real time. It's the idea that you cannot actually be a vulgar, ugly racist in public and still have the privilege of anonymity while you endanger the lives and safety of others, right? I know I said it earlier, but like what they tell you is off limits is what works. That's why they declare it as off limits.
Right. And another thing to ask is what views do you think are being stifled right now? Like if you could ask some people who signed this, like, okay, what's a thing that you think you can't say?
Right.
Tell me, give me an example. Is it about trade? You know,
right, like exactly.
About tax policy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always like, no, you know what it is. I just don't, you know, it's like, okay, we know what's going on here.
Right. And the other thing I want to talk about cancel culture, and it doesn't get addressed in the letter, but I think it's important because it doesn't get talked about. And it's something that like I have very personal experience with. I mentioned it earlier about being wrong about white people saying the N-word, but like cancel culture does not blossom out of a vacuum, right? I have said things and done things on my show that I regret. Right. Jokes that I wish I hadn't made because they were a little bit mean, or things I've said or things I've done. And I can count on one hand the people who have tried to cancel me. Right. Who have just been like, I don't like you, Eli. You said this. You did this. I'm never listening to your show again. OK, I can count that on one hand. I cannot count the amount of people who have reached out to say, hey, I was hurt by this. This is why I think you shouldn't have done it. It really hurt me. I would love it in the future if you would look into this or do that, right? We had a discussion on our show, The Skeptocrat, a couple of years ago where we talked about standardized testing and disability, where Heath was like, hey, I think maybe you shouldn't get extra time if you have a disability on tests. Am I wrong about this? I feel like I'm wrong. And we had dozens of listeners, including researchers on the subject, reach out and educate us. And that's the thing that gets missed in the conversation of cancel culture. I promise you, before anyone ever said J.K. Rowling is canceled, her trans listeners, her trans readers, her trans followers reached out and said, this is why you are incorrect about this.
Yeah.
You are causing me pain. You are causing me harm. Please listen. And then she said no.
Yeah. Right?
And that's really important. Cancel culture does not come out of a vacuum. In my experience, you always have to ignore the sincere attempts at education from the people you're hurting first.
I think I've seen some of those letters posted by people who are like, because keep in mind, I mean, I don't know if you remember this time, people love Harry Potter.
Yeah.
People really fucking love Harry Potter. And trans people often love Harry Potter because everybody loves Harry Potter. And many trans fans of J.K. Rowling were like, I mean, if for nothing else, to try to make it so that they didn't have to have a favorite thing of theirs ruined by a transphobe, very patiently wrote her letters and were like, please, like, just consider this. And I think you're absolutely right that it's not as though this came out of nowhere for J.K. Rowling. Like, she said no. She declined to listen.
And rather than focusing this conversation, as it so often is, on the consequences for the person who did the bad thing, consider the pain that a person must go through in writing their favorite author, defending their humanity, only to have it ignored or mocked or used as an example of cancel culture. Again, these are things that as a person who is incredibly lucky, I cannot fathom, right? No one, like I'm Jewish, right? Which is certainly deals with a lot of hostility, but like, I have never had to deal with Mark Twain award-winning comics dedicating the first 15 minutes of their set to how greedy Jews are. And when I point that out, having a bunch of people being like, these fucking kids today, you can't make a good Jew joke anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's heartbreaking to read these letters that a lot of people attempted to give her the benefit of the doubt and say, like, you might not know this, or you might, because when you do stuff like, talk about how you're going to get attacked in a bathroom if, you know, women are allowed in your bathroom, that doesn't make any sense. Like it's one thing to do that out of ignorance. And you still very much should be criticized for that. It's another to have it pointed out to you that like, hey, this doesn't actually happen. This is not a real thing. It's basically a transphobic lie. Your biggest threat in a bathroom is probably a Republican congressman or something. Once that's pointed out to you, you have to either learn from that or accept the consequences. And by the way, the thing that's so annoying about this is J.K. Rowling is still a bazillionaire. She's still sitting there, a bazillionaire, able to spout off on just nonsense about trans people. And the worst that happens to her is some people get mad at her.
Right.
Like, that's just how free speech works.
Right. What this letter is outraged by is the fact that people have a voice and are expressing their pain, right? Because that's the difference between now and then, right? The good old days they're wishing for was just the time when the voices that were hurt by statements like Rowling's were silenced, right? Just and, when and those it's so people important didn't that the, have any is, platform.
Exactly. And the only platform that often a lot of people have, a lot of progressives or a lot of oppressed groups have, is like social media. It's not as though they are able to exact consequences in the system.
Right.
Republicans control almost everything. And very conservative people, even, you know, Democrats in power often are more conservative than the average social media user or something. Those are the people who have real power to do real things. And the one avenue of power that marginalized groups have is their voice on social media. That's like the one place they can do anything. And this letter is like, no, sorry, you shouldn't even be able to do that.
Right. That is too far. It is too far for you to have any kind of voice on this. The only acceptable, and they tell you what they want, right? The only acceptable way for you to voice your pain, your oppression, your real struggle is for you to debate me and convince me personally of your human worth. That is the only way. That is the foundation of society. Everything else is the death of civilization unless you get up on a stage in an intelligence squared debate and convince me that I'm wrong. Something that scientifically we know does not fucking work.
Yeah. Couple more things to point out. I wanted to just throw this out there too. A lot of what gets lumped in as cancel culture or this kind of thing, a lot of it is not really even what marginalized groups want. Like, for we've seen this with Black Lives Matter a lot. Like, Black Lives Matter protests are happening and they're very, very overdue, reasonable demands about, you know, police unions and use of force and all this stuff. And sometimes the response is like, well, let's take down this episode of Golden Girls where they had some face masks on that made it look like blackface. And I think that gets blamed on Black Lives Matter. But honestly, that's not what they want. Like, I don't think that groups are out there being like, ban the Golden Girls, a show from the late 80s that is definitely still very important in today's culture. It's like, no, that's something that white people are probably overreacting to. That, and it might be a good idea. It depends on like what the example is. Like, maybe it is a good idea to take something down if it was, you know, racially insensitive, of course. But sometimes these examples that people latch onto where it's like, but this wasn't even really da da da. They still get to blame marginalized groups for doing that, even though they're not the ones in power doing that. That's like old white dudes who are trying to make a decision to save face that has really nothing to do with what the protesters want. And yet it still gets to be blamed on the movement.
Yeah, I saw this meme that was a scene from SpongeBob where a character's trying to get Patrick to do a thing. And it was that, but replaced with defund the police. So it was like, defund the police, no more syrup. Defund the police, no more Uncle Ben. No, defund the police. We'll take down a couple episodes of 30 Rock. Like, those are not the demands of the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's also incredibly reductive to the tremendous amount of like academic literature that's been published about these arguments, right? One of the things that white supremacy does is it reduces the Black Lives Matter movement down to people chanting in the streets and doesn't acknowledge the tremendous work put out by like Michelle Alexander and Ta-Nehisi Coates, where like, okay, if debate and conversation were the answer, here you go, right? You can read the new Jim Crow and should be convinced. The fact that you failed to do that because of your lack of education is not the fault of Black Lives Matter. It's your fault.
Absolutely. And the one last thing, as we're running out of time, that I have to point out was that within minutes, what's his name, who you keep referencing, Jesse Singal or whatever his name is, completely made an ass out of himself because someone else on this list who, by the way, I did want to mention some of the like good people that I hope will reconsider, because like I'm a huge fan of, for example, Michelle Goldberg. I really like her. I think she is a genuine progressive and someone who would not want to be on a list with people who are anti-trans. I don't know what's going on there. I hope people like her who signed this maybe reconsider, at least put out a statement, do something, you know, to kind of say like, oh, this is what I thought was happening or something. But someone who also signed it was Matt Iglesias of Vox, and someone who works for Vox who is trans wrote kind of a letter. Well, it wasn't an open letter. It was a letter to Vox, to like the Vox leadership, that then she also posted on Twitter as like, here's what I wrote to Vox leadership about Matt Iglesias. And then Jesse Singal immediately tried to have that trans person canceled, essentially, like doing the exact thing he thinks is a huge problem today. He blew her, you know, quote tweeted, oh, look at the person, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you're doing the thing that you think people shouldn't be able to do. It's only okay when you do it for people that you think are being unreasonable, but somehow it's not okay if anyone else does it.
And you know, the thing I want to point out, if I can leave us on a slightly optimistic note, is that like, there are good and welcoming communities in the skeptic community. I think one of the things I wish I had talked about more, and that I try to continue to talk about more, is how many absolutely wonderful people there are in the skeptic community who create welcoming and safe environments for trans people and people of color, and how much better it's getting and how we continue to work to make it better, that this change, that these are growing pains as our community grows and improves. And so if you are a trans person or a person of color or just a person with less privilege than Thomas and I, which is almost everybody, just know that there are lots and lots of really amazing people in this community who welcome you with open arms. And, you know, if we can ask anything of you, and we certainly don't deserve to, but if we can ask anything of you, it's like, don't let the jerks drive you away from what is otherwise a truly great community.
That's a good note to leave it on, but we didn't even get to talk about Noam Chomsky. I don't think Noam Chomsky is a secret Trump supporter. I think that it's capable. It's perfectly understandable to me. And by understandable, I mean, I can comprehend what's going on here, that some people who were genuine leftists and are genuine leftists are uneasy with certain avenues of social progress. And that's their problem. It's not our responsibility to not criticize them at all. So I don't know what you're doing here. All right, Eli, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. That's a hell of a breakdown. I'll put your links in the show notes. And congrats on being a dad, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, my friend.
Of being really anxious all the time and not really being able to contribute.
All the time, watching that monitor.
Yeah. Well, everyone knows where to find you, right?
God awful movies, The Scathing Atheist, The Skeptocrat, and oh wait, the show didn't exist last time. D&D Minus. We are doing an actual play podcast now, so you can hear me, Noah Heath, my wife, and our editor Morgan playing Dungeons and Dragons. It's a lot of fun.
I want to come guest as a dragon or a dungeon.
I want
whichever.
You to guest so badly.
Anytime, man. Anytime. I'm just waiting. Yeah. For my invite. All right. Thanks again, Eli. And thanks for listening, folks.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Serious Inquiries Only. If you like the show, the absolute best thing you can do is support us at patreon.com/seriouspod. The second best thing you can do is please share it on social media or by word of mouth. Speaking of social media, if you'd like to follow Jamie on Twitter, she's at Euthyphro, and follow me at SiriusPod. If you'd like to be Facebook friends, send me a request at facebook.com/ThomasPodcast. If you're not up for that level of intimacy, that's fine. Maybe you want to join the discussion at facebook.com/groups/SIO members. Thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time.